you won.
Well, I don't like it. I don't like what that is all about. And as you know, and I think you probably feel very similar to me, we can go over there and maybe make a difference. You know, you could avoid it, and that's one way of handling it. Or you can go over there and very perhaps make a difference.
You are professionally flying in the face of these laws, and you are agreeing that LGBT people are integrated and equal members of society. So does that change any of your prior public stances on marriage equality here in the U.S.?
No, it doesn't change. I just think it's you know, you are a wonderful guy. And you know I did not put up a fight. In fact, I was very honored. And I think you're going to do fantastically.
Ho-ho! All right. We are back. It is the Rebecca Giroux Show. Thanks for tuning in. We have got a great show for you tonight. Melanie Nathan from Ublog D, Ublog Da, the world's greatest blog title ever. And on top of that, it's a really good blog on top of that. We're talking about the end of religious exemption tonight because we've been getting there's a lot of controversy. People are lining up on both sides of this thing. And, you know, I'll be honest with you. Usually when I see something like this, I say, yeah, I've got a position. Here it is. Bam. I have to admit to being a little bit torn on this one. I really am. Because on the one hand, I can see both sides of the argument here. On the one hand, you got people who are saying, you know what? This is bullshit. This is like a backdoor to discrimination. It's not an anti-discrimination law. It's a roadmap to discrimination. It teaches people how you could legally discriminate against LGBT people without running afoul of the law. Okay? I see that point. In fact, I would argue that I agree with it. However, I also see the other side of the point, which is, if we start out, if we ask for so little now, if we set the bar this low, now, today, when there's virtually no chance that this is going anywhere in this current Congress, that maybe we get a vote in the Senate, if we're lucky, if the stars align and Harry Reid finds his spine that he keeps finding and then misplacing, you know, he can stand up to Republicans on shutting down the government, but I don't know if he's found his spine in regards to standing up in regards to, you know, 17-year-old promises from the Democratic Senate caucus.
Mr. Milquetoast.
Yes, exactly. I mean, yep. I'm sorry, but, you know, one display of backbone does not a leader make. I mean, don't get me wrong. I would love to see Harry Reid stand up and say, we're going to take a vote on this thing. We're going to do it, and we're going to do it now. I would love to see that. Do I believe it's going to happen? After waiting 5 years, after the last time this guy told us soon? Not so much. I hope I'm wrong. I really do. But I'm not sure that I am. But in any case, what you just heard at the top of the show, what we just opened with, was, of course, Donald Trump, who is the producer, I guess you could say, of the Miss Universe pageant. Thomas Roberts, who, of course, is MSNBC host. He's on at 11 to 12 Eastern time here on the United States. And he's an openly gay man. And he is going to be one of the co-hosts of the Miss Universe pageant this year, which is taking place in Moscow. Now, of course, as you might imagine, it's Moscow. There are propaganda laws, more considered to be probably on the way. They just recently pulled a bill that would have made it legal to pull children to abrogate the parental rights of parents in Russia because they're gay. That's been pulled, and now it's being reintroduced when they want to rewrite something. They weren't specific, but they want to rewrite part of the law, and then they're going to resubmit it. So, yeah. We've also got... you know, there's been a lot of controversy about Thomas Roberts and going to do this. Personally, I've exchanged email with the guy. I think he's a class act. He is the guy who was, before anyone else at MSNBC was even willing to mention ENDA or trans people or anything like that, he was the guy. He was there first. Before Melissa Harris-Perry, before anyone, by the way, did you catch it? Did you catch it? Don't blink or you would have missed it. Rachel Maddow had a guest on the other night, and she actually asked him about ENDA, which was cool. You know, it would be great if she had an entire feature on ENDA. I mean, you know, I think it's great. I mean, considering this is the first time I think I've directly heard her ask anyone about ENDA in the entire history of her show. So I guess it's a step forward. But, you know, it's kind of like, you know, come on, couldn't you, you know, it leaves me wanting more. Let's just put it that way. And Thomas Roberts, like I say, as far as I'm concerned, I think his intentions are absolutely great. I'm a little concerned about what the backlash might be. But we have a clip. He was on Morning Joe the other day explaining his rationale on taking this job and going to Russia to do this. And here it goes.
I've gotten a lot of reaction, Mika, from people, not just about, you know, is a competition, a beauty competition, the proper forum to go to try to make a difference on this point, but just the fact that I would accept this assignment. Now, I was out in 2006. I've been out for a very long time. I don't think anybody can question me on where I show up, where I throw my support, and what I challenge on my show every day in conversations about equality, whether it's for immigration reform, women's pay, or LGBT equality. So reaction's been interesting. But I think that this is a great opportunity to showcase that I am no different from the other LGBT humans that live on this planet. Gay rights are human rights. Human rights are gay rights. And so I go with my husband to prove that.
Very nice. You know, I have no question that Thomas Roberts' heart is in the right place, that he believes he can make a difference, that he hopes he can make a point. And I share those hopes with him. My concern is it's not really, in the end, about him. It's not really about the fact that he's a married man and he's going there with his husband. It's not about the fact that he's going to host a beauty pageant. Because let's be honest, Thomas Roberts is a professional. He's got a job to do when he's there, and that's what he's there to do. As he himself has admitted, he's also going with a certain level of privilege because he's not just going as Thomas Roberts, average American gay guy, with his husband to go hang out in Russia. He's going as Thomas Roberts, MSNBC host, NBC Universal employee, to host an event. So it's not really the same thing. He is going to have security around him. He is going to be shuttled from place to place. Okay, Thomas, here's the camera. Sit here. Do that. You know, he's got a very specific job to do. And so this is the kind of thing where it could be a very positive statement on an international stage. It really sends a message. And that would be great. The problem, my concern, is that what happens if that's not how it's received? Do you see what I'm saying? What if there's a backlash here? What if it makes things worse? What if people get angry because there's an openly gay man hosting this? I mean, the fact is let's be honest, we all know that in Russia, since these laws have passed, since they've become law, anti-LGBT violence there has exploded in Russia. So I have to admit that I'm concerned that there could be a backlash here, that it could make things even worse. I mean, I don't know. The problem is we are in such new territory here in terms of national politics, in terms of international politics. This is somewhere where we've never had to go before. I mean, yeah, sure, Hillary Clinton made speeches at the UN and stuff like that, but that's not the same thing as going to another country and saying, here I am. I mean, don't forget. Let's not forget. Forget about Russia for a second. We still buy oil from countries that behead gay people and trans people in public squares. We buy our oil from these kind of people. Seriously. Okay, so, you know, I mean, I question, in a lot of ways, how we justify. I mean, granted, Russia's laws are terrible. They're awful, and they're a disgrace, and they're all that stuff. But has anybody ever noticed how nobody ever speaks out against Saudi Arabia? Or Kuwait, or Qatar, or any of these other Middle Eastern countries where just being gay or trans is punishable by death. How come we never hear about those countries? How come we don't hear President Obama? How come we don't hear our activists in the community getting all worked up about buying our oil from a country that hates us so much that they will behead us in public? How come we're not talking about that? I mean, yes, the laws in Russia are terrible, but nobody's calling for public beheadings. But yet we're focusing on Russia and ignoring these other people, this other country, these other countries that we give billions and billions of American dollars to every year. We have enriched them beyond our wildest dreams on our money, buying their oil. How come we never have that conversation? That's what I want to know. How come Saudi Arabia never enters the picture? How much stuff do we buy from China? We all know what China does to people who don't toe the party line, don't we? Nobody's saying we should boycott China. Nobody's saying we should boycott Saudi Arabian oil. Nobody's saying we should boycott other things that we buy from the Middle East. I mean, don't get me wrong. I want to make it clear. What Russia is doing here is detestable, is beneath contempt. But the fact that what Russia is doing is as awful as it is, does not eliminate what's going on in other countries, in countries where we absolutely remain silent, where we never mention what's going on, because we keep sending over bucket loads and shiploads of U.S. currency. Well, you know what I mean, electronically, talking figuratively here. But we send these people billions and billions of dollars for their oil. So nobody wants to talk about that. I mean... I don't know. It makes me concerned, because you know what? I'll tell you something. Honestly, if I were a Russian, and I tell you, actually, both of my sides of my family come from Russia. That's where my red hair comes from.
Really?
Yeah. But yeah, both sides of my family came over on the boat in the early 1900s from Russia.
I didn't know that about you.
Yeah. It's true fact. True fact. But in any case, if I were a Russian, an average Russian, and let's say I'm not a trans person. Let's say I'm just an average Russian citizen who is predisposed to homophobia based on the government law. You know, because after all, if the government is telling you it's bad, your first, you know, predisposition, barring other information, to say, well, if the government's banning it, there must be something wrong with it, right? I mean, I'm not talking about people who actually take the time to sit there and do political analysis and say to themselves, do I believe? But let's be honest. When the government tells you something, it tends to get more attention. It's more credible when it comes from Barack Obama than when it comes from, let's say, your township's mayor. It just is. Why? Because this guy's the head of the government. So the question I have is, when do we start saying this is unacceptable to us in the broader sense, that we're not going to do business. And I'm not talking about necessarily a boycott, although, frankly, as far as Sochi goes, I support that particular boycott. Because I don't think the United States, I think if we're a country of values, I think we have to stand up for those values. I think that when a country does what Russia is doing right now, and there is no credible reaction from the United States and other Western countries, no reaction, no willingness to say, this is wrong and I'm not going to participate. Well, what it does is it justifies the next time. When Saudi Arabia wants the Olympics and says, well, you know, you gave it to Russia. They have anti-gay laws. Who cares if we publicly behead our gay and trans people? We want it too. If you can give it to them, why can't you give it to us? And if you can give it to Saudi Arabia, well, why not Qatar? And why not any of these other major countries that totally treat their government treats them like garbage? You know, like, oh, I don't know, say Beijing, China, you know? You know what I'm saying? I mean, if we don't speak out, if we don't say, you know what, this is unacceptable to me as a citizen, as a human being, as a person who believes that all human beings, all people on this planet should be treated fairly and equally, if that's not good enough for you, then, you know, what limits are there? I mean, you can do anything. And it's, oh, okay, don't worry about it because, after all, you're not going to have to worry. It's not like anybody's going to call you on it. You can still perform human rights abuses. You can still mistreat anyone you don't like. You can still go on a religious war against your own people. Not a problem. You can still be a viable candidate for the Olympics and welcome in the international community because, well, that's just what people do, right? I mean, seriously, when do we take a stand on stuff like this? I think we should boycott. I don't think the United States has any business going to an Olympics in a place where they treat gay and lesbian and trans citizens this way. We've got a story coming up a little bit later of a trans woman who took her own life. I think we talked about this a little bit last week. This is what's happening. People are dying. And again, I hope that Thomas Roberts, I know his intentions are good. There is absolutely no question that Thomas Roberts is a class guy, that he's going there with the best of intentions. He's going there to make a positive impact. Of that, there is no doubt in my mind whatsoever. And I think he will do a great job because he is a professional and he will do his job as a professional, professionally. But Thomas Roberts can't control how the Russian public perceives this. And as I was saying earlier, I think an average Russian is going to look at this and say, well, we're not so bad. Look at what they're doing over in Saudi Arabia. Look what they're doing in China. Look what they're doing. We don't have any, we don't do a lot of business with North Korea. But, you know, it's pretty much the same thing. I mean, you know, we pick and choose. We pick and choose. And I think it's fair to say, I hope that what he does, it will be well received by the average Russian. And not used as an excuse for more violence against LGBT people. Because I think that's a real possibility. And it scares the crap out of me. That's what my concern is. Not about Thomas Roberts. But about what happens when the pageant is over, when MSNBC or when NBC's planes all take off and go back to the United States, and the LGBT community of Russia is left to deal with whatever the aftermath of that happens to be, good, bad, or indifferent. That's what my concern is what happens when the lights go out and all the celebrities go home and this community, these Russian LGBT citizens, then have to live with what's left. That's what concerns me. And I don't know. I as try as I might, I'm just afraid that for all of Thomas Roberts' good intentions, it's entirely possible that that this could end up doing more damage. And that scares the crap out of me. It just does. Again, this is not about Thomas Roberts. I think he's a wonderful guy. I think he is a true community hero because of the way he has put himself out there to cover things like ENDA and trans person on his show. He's the first person to have Janet Mock on in mainstream media. All that stuff, okay? It just concerns me as to what the end result, after all said and done, might be.
Certainly not harming the Donald. As a matter of fact, he's attention-whoring this situation to the max, as you would expect him to do, I guess.
Ah, okay. Hey, Mr. Mike, I believe it is about time for our first lovely break.
Yes, it is.
And we have got a lovely tune from Anthony and the Johnsons. Hope There's Someone. We'll be back in about five with...
Hope there's someone who'll set my heart free, nice to hold when I'm tired. There's a ghost on the horizon when I go to bed. Hug enough, fall asleep at night. How will I raise my head?
Let's get out of here. Look, Emerald City is closer and prettier than ever.
You're out of the woods, you're out of the dark, you're out of the
one.
Back, it's the Rebecca Giroir Show. Thanks for sticking around. And we have a great guest lined up tonight. We have Melanie Nathan from the blog Oblog Da, as I said, my very favorite blog title ever. Hi, Melanie. How you doing?
I'm really good. Thank you so much for having me on, Becca.
My pleasure. And the reason I wanted to have you on is because you posted something on your blog that I thought was really good. You came out very strongly against the current version of ENDA that has rather strong religious exemptions, basically that say if you've got a religious reason, you can pretty much have a backdoor to discrimination through the Employment Non-Discrimination Act. Can you talk a little bit about what led you to take this position? Because there are a lot of people also who are saying, well, if you want this thing to pass, we have to make these exemptions broad because it's the only way to bring certain Republicans on board.
Right. Yeah. I tell you what made me take a strong stand, and I'll be honest with you, I've sort of been slip-sliding along with this for a little while, even though on the blog we've been writing very strongly against the religious exemptions for a while, specifically Kathy Christofferson, who writes for my blog. She's been very specific about it for quite a while. I mean, we've been writing about it for a while. But what really struck me now that it's coming to a head, so to speak, is my understanding, and I get a lot of hate through my blog from people in the religious world, people who cite biblical terms against homosexuality and against forms of gender identity. And I realized it really hit me that the way this the way the religious exemptions are worded, it's not so much about the genuine religious exemptions that I am concerned, in as much as I am concerned about the fact that we are giving license to use religion to discriminate. And in doing that, we are inviting those haters, and there are very many of them, we all know that, to come out and just carte blanche discriminate against us. If this was going to be used in a good faith fashion, maybe I would be a little bit more on board. But I do know that we are really, really faced with a lot of people that just don't want to hire LGBTI people.
Yes, I absolutely agree with you there. In fact, I've experienced it myself. I haven't had I haven't been gainfully employed, frankly, since Barack Obama took office. And this is here in New Jersey, in a state where we have very strong anti-discrimination laws, but we're bordered by two states that have nothing for trans people. We have the state of New York, which has full protections for gays and lesbians, but transgender people are unprotected in most of the state. And then we have Pennsylvania, which has nothing for anybody except in municipal level protections, such as in places like Philadelphia and Pittsburgh and other cities in Pennsylvania. Right. So we're really kind of, and now we just got Delaware. Delaware just passed a law. So now we've got that covered. But the big argument that I hear, and this comes from, as you know, we were at Netroots Nation at the same time earlier in the year. And a lot of the arguments that we heard at that time, particularly from Tico Almeida of Freedom to Work, for example, was saying that, you know, it has to be this broad because this is what will pass, and that he doesn't believe that churches should be limited, that they should have the right to discriminate based on their religion. And I as far as that goes, personally, for me, I agree with that logic. But I also say, you know, you have a right to say we don't want a gay priest. But I question, do you have the right to say we don't want a gay janitor?
Right. Well, let me say this as well, that the proponents of the argument, such as Freedom to Work, come from this perspective, and I can give you a direct quote. They recognize that religious liberty is one of our nation's founding principles. The bill protects the First Amendment religious freedom rights to churches, et cetera, et cetera. And what they're concerned about is that this might open up challenging in the court that could down ender if we did not have the religious exemption. And I come from the perspective that, so what? Let the court test it if they want to do that. Take that five-year road and journey down the court. I would rather see that happen than, as I said earlier, give license to discriminate. And I think I'd like to take it a step further. I think we've made ground in the courts on our side of this. There's sparse, but there has been legislation. I think what could happen is if we create legislation in this fashion, what we're doing is, in essence, and I'm using a terminology that explains it but might not be the correct terminology, we might in essence be waiving some of the ground we've already gained. And that concerns me because when you bring in legislation, it's very explicit, even though it's subject obviously to some interpretation. But I believe that we are shooting ourselves in the toe here from getting the ultimate of what we deserve. We have a lousy Congress right now. Who's to say that we couldn't get a better Congress that'll help us push through better legislation? You know, there's so much strategy that one could employ at this point. I know we've been waiting for years and years and years and years for ENDA. So the temptation is to wave our flags in the air and say, victory, victory, we got ENDA. But we have to look at this more carefully. Are we shooting ourselves in the toes because we've got a lousy Congress and we're trying to get anything done through? You know, maybe there will be an opportunity for something a lot better.
I agree with you there. But, you know, we've also seen what happens when we have a good Congress, when we have a Congress that themselves told us what they needed to get in the past. They told us this in 2008. They won the White House, the House of Representatives, and the Senate. They had majorities in each. And what we saw was when they had everything that they needed and more, they simply completely ignored ENDA, threw it under the bus, and focused on marriage because that's where the where the money is. I mean, we've already seen what these people do when they have everything that they say they need to get the job done. So, I question whether or not a lot of people have floated the idea that we need to just scrap ENDA and start anew and take and start promoting a new bill that is stronger. Do you agree with that?
Well, yes, I do on some level. This is my, I'm an idealist and very optimistic. And so when I see anything that I feel that marginalizes us, it really makes me angry. I'm angry that we have focused on marriage in the way we have because I saw it as an invitation to the right wing type of person to come in and say, hey, don't steal our word, marriage, et cetera, et cetera. I've always been a proponent of a full equality bill. And I don't think that as a unified LGBT community, we have ever fully established that as a benchmark. And I think we have to go right back to that as a failing. Now, let's take Nelson Mandela and let's take Martin Luther King Jr. as an example. Can you imagine taking those movements through, okay, this week you can sit on the bench, and next week you can do this, the next week you can do that. You know, even though there might not have been exactly what people wanted when they wanted it, there was always that benchmark for treat me 100% equally under the law in all respects. But we as a movement have sought our equality in piecemeal, through piecemeal legislation. So we've never set the benchmark, and that, I believe, is our first mistake. Marginalizing ourselves in the way we have done has set us up for having to depend on piecemeal stuff and getting things in bits and pieces and then accepting less than what we deserve. This is just the way I look at it.
I hear what you're saying. So then let me ask you a question. If that's the case, then do we need to get tougher with our representatives in Congress to say to people like Barack Obama and Nancy Pelosi and Harry Reid, not good enough? No, we need more from you. You need to do more. Our activist community tends to focus on say, oh, it's all the Republicans' fault. They'll never pass it. They'll never do this. They'll never do that. But my question is, are the Republicans really where we need to focus, or do we need to focus instead on getting our own party, the Democratic Party leadership, on board with fighting with this and keeping the promises that they made to us 5 years ago when Barack Obama was elected president and they had full control of the entire federal government?
Right. I think that's a really good question. And I think where we need to start is with ourselves. And I think we need to start with our own leadership. And we need to start with our own organizations who've established themselves in the different categories and groups of what they are and are not going to do. I don't feel like we have a fully cohesive, unified movement. For example, this week from the Obama Organized for America, I got an email asking me to call my senators and ask them to pass ENDA. They didn't even touch on the religious exemptions, talking about it for a second in the email that I got. As a non-political person, I would have gone, whoop-de-doo, let me call my senator. Well, I did. I called my senators, and I said, I am protesting ENDA in its current form. And so I went against what the Democrats had sent out in the Obama Organizing for America email. I said to my senators, I would like to quote what Julian Bond from the NAACP has said about ENDA. Julian Bond gave a very powerful statement opposing ENDA and the religious exemptions. Now, I heard from Get Equal about it. They brought it up in a strong email, and they're the only group that is currently, that I've seen anything from, so I stand to be corrected. In the beginning, the ACLU, NCLR, and a bunch of other groups did complain about the religious exemptions, but I haven't seen anything from any of these people in this current push, except for Get Equal. And so I think we should be speaking out and saying to, I don't care if we confuse them. You know, I just don't think it's good enough right now. But I also don't think that our leadership is, I don't know what our leadership is or where it is. I'm confused. You know, who is it?
That's exactly my concern, because you know everybody says, well, you know, the Republicans have no leadership and the Tea Party is uncontrollable and all that, but you know I don't see a lot of leadership taking place on the Democratic side either, or at least not around this particular issue. You know, I wonder if, you know, before we start attacking Republicans for being anti-LGBT, if we shouldn't be better off focusing on getting the people who are supposedly on our side to be right. pro-LGBT, you know?
Rebecca, it includes our own people. I'm talking about leadership in our LGBT community.
Well, yeah, with people like Heather Kronk accepted, and of course Felipe as well. I mean, those guys are great. I know them both. We haven't had a lot. I mean, you know, the human rights campaign, we've noticed in the last several months, has become more proactive around ENDA and trans issues and things like that. But this is after decades of getting in the way, of decades of slowing down the process of trying to draw the focus towards marriage and towards gay-only laws like they did in 2007. I mean, I think part of the problem here is and I wonder if you agree, is that these organizations, the leadership of our organizations, like the task force, like the Human Rights Campaign and all these other, they've done so much damage over the last three decades that, you know, it's difficult to dig out from under it now. And there right. doesn't seem to be a big effort being made to do that. We see a little bit of effort from HRC, but compared to what's already been done, I don't know how that works. Do you know?
Yeah. Well, it's been confusing to me because I've understood, you know, I've been around a long time. I was an attorney practicing law in South Africa during the height of apartheid. I know what a movement looks like. And, you know, this is not a movement. This is a selection of organizations with promoting piecemeal things without a real benchmark, without something that we can all unify and rally around. Just this last week, I did see an email from HRC saying five years and 50 states for marriage. Well, it's going to be millions and millions of dollars of donations. And, you know, I would like to see all the organizations come together under one big umbrella and say, okay, we're going to ask for a full equality bill, some kind of legislation similar to a Civil Rights Act that basically says thou shalt not discriminate based on sexual orientation, gender identity, period. And then everything will flow from that. Now, whether that's we can accomplish that or not is not the point. The point is to establish the benchmark. Every movement has established a unified benchmark. But our movement has piecemeal legislation like apples and pears and oranges hanging from different trees.
Yeah, I see what you're saying. I don't know. I personally think that we as a community, I think we need to focus on getting our friends in line before we go after those who we already know are against us and aren't
That's
likely
exactly
to change
right.
their positions. But if we can't get the people both in the Congress and in the political scene and in the media, quite frankly, to mm-hmm. back us up, because, I mean, I know you know as well as I do, when you turn on your television, you get inundated with information about gay marriage, but it's a very rare day that you see anything on workplace rights or ENDA or anything like that.
Right.
So I question, you know, what more effort could be done and what could we do that we're not already doing in order to change that? And I think that until the media, frankly, and the Congress start paying attention. And I'm not so sure. I mean, I think I think there's too much money involved mm-hmm. with marriage that the politicians mm-hmm. just say, you know, why should I take risks on things like workplace rights when I can just come out in favor of gay marriage and $1 million in donations shows up in my campaign coffers the next day? Why should mm-hmm. I bother putting myself on the line for the poor people when I do much better by putting myself out there for rich people?
Yeah. I mean, you really are speaking to the system, and you're right. I mean, the whole way the system works is really, very money-oriented, getting re-elected-oriented, and, I mean, where is the real consciousness? And I think the real consciousness really comes from the people who are suffering the suffer. And are we noisy enough? Are we loud enough? I mean, I've done, even in the marriage realm, even when we were protesting and doing certain things pertaining to marriage, the same call, 30 or 40 people would show up with banners, but where were the myriads of LGBT people that would go to a gay bar on a Saturday night and spend $60 on drinking, beers and having a great time? Where were all those people? Where are the people that come out with, to have fun on Pride? Why aren't we all more engaged in our equality? Do we have to have gone through a spouse getting kicked out of the country personally to care? Do we have to have been kicked out of a bathroom as a transgender person to care? I mean, do we have to have suffered something personally to care? How do we come together as a community? To me, that is the key. That's where it starts.
I totally agree, and I think that's a question that we're going to have to answer over time, because if we're going to move this movement along and it's going to become as important an issue as marriage is, we're going to have to do exactly that. We're going to have to teach people why they should care. Melanie, I want to thank you so much for coming on and talking to us. This has been awesome. I hope you'll do it again. And I want to remind everybody to check out Oblog Deeb, Oblog Da, spell it like it sounds, and put it into your Google and go read it. I read it every day. It's awesome. And thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, Rebecca. It's been a pleasure to speak to you. Thank you so much.
Okay. Talk to you soon. Bye-bye now. All right, and that was Melanie Nathan, webmistress of Oblog D, Oblog Da. It is rocking. I strongly advise you, check it out. It is a good one. It's part of my regular morning web crawl. I hit it every day. It's good stuff. And we are going to take another break. We have got, I love this, Hedwig and the Angry Inch. It's Halloween, gang, so you know we had to get to some of this. We got Freaks.
It's awesome.
We'll be back. Rebecca Jo Show. Thanks for sticking around. Wasn't Melanie Nathan great? I love her. She's awesome. I got to meet her when I went to Netroots Nation a few months ago. She is major cool. Hopefully we'll have her back again. She is really good. But we are done with that. So let's get on to some stories that we had this week. Let me look it up here. Now I know I just had it. Oh no. What did I do with it?
Uh-oh.
Did I? Oh my goodness. It looks like I'm going to have to go. Did I do something stupid like go off the right board? I think I did. Okay, not a problem. I can fix that. Let's see. Okay, yeah. Well, there are things that are easy to fix. Okay, so let's see. What do we got? We talked about Thomas Roberts. You heard what I have to say on that. Really, I have to admit, I hope that he's right, that everything that he says he's hoping to happen happens the way he says. Because if it does, I think it's great. I think Thomas is exactly the right guy to be doing something like that. I think it would be, you know, because to be honest, I'll just throw this in before I go on to something else. But, you know, you think about it. At one point, there was a move to try and get Rachel Maddow to cover, like, Sochi Olympics, which I think would be silly, first of all, because she's a political reporter. I mean, you know, I mean, if you're going to, you know, it would be like putting a sports reporter in to do politics. You know, I mean, it's just not going to work. Okay, I mean, you got a few people who can do both, okay, but not everybody can be Keith Olbermann, you know? I think that would put Rachel out of her element, and I'm not so sure that would be good, A, for her career, B, for NBC, and C, for her fans, because I think she would be out of her element, and I don't think that, you know, she is so good at what she does, that why would you take her out of that arena? You know, I don't see that. But Thomas, I think, is exactly the right person to do something like this. And so I'm hoping it works out. I hope it works out the way he is hoping it works out, because if it does, it'll be great for everyone, and hopefully even for the people in Russia who maybe, you know, maybe their government will be a little shamed by this whole scenario. And as a result of that shaming, maybe, you know, these laws might get, it might be too much to hope that the laws are going to get repealed, but maybe like this new one that they're trying to get passed, the one that would abrogate parental rights for gay couples, maybe that will die an ignominious death that it deserves, but we can only hope. Now, all right, I want to move on to something else. I thought this was interesting. As you may know, in California, there was just a law signed, and it's actually a pretty benign law, I think, personally. I mean, I realize this is controversial, but controversial to who? There's a law just passed in California, just signed into law by Governor Jerry Brown, that basically says that a student's gender identity is what is to be used when determining bathroom use. So in other words, if a child is trans, presents as a girl, then she uses the girl's room. If a child is trans and presents as a boy, she uses the boy's room. Seems pretty simple. I mean, I don't know about you, but I went to school. I went to grade school. Didn't you go to grade school? I mean, were people checking each other out? I didn't notice that. I mean, granted, you know, when you're 11 years old, you're not really paying attention to those things. You can only feel uncomfortable, as these people are claiming, if you pay attention. Now, in high school, you might, well, I'm not saying you do, but you might have a better argument because you say, well, you know, students change for gym class and there's more body exposure, blah, blah, blah. Those things could all be worked around. I mean, you know, come on. I mean, the way these things are done, the truth is, most people do not go, what do they want to do about lesbians? You know what I mean? If there's a lesbian student and she goes into the girls' room to change for gym, is anybody concerned that she is going to rape her fellow students? How about a boy? How about a gay boy, a gay high school student? Who goes into the boys' room, goes into the boys' locker room to change for gym with all the other boys? There's no gender identity. Are they afraid that he, because he's attracted to boys, is going to suddenly attack people? No, nobody's making that argument because it's a stupid argument. Just like in this case. This is an equally stupid argument that just because a child is born with a penis and goes into the girls' locker room or even just into the girls' bathroom, which I would point out, as every trans woman and biological woman knows, have doors on the stalls. I mean, there are no public urinals like there are in men's rooms. I mean, honestly, I would think that the transgender boys, in other words, the female-born boys who are trans, would have more of a problem because they're always going to have to go into the stall and close the door, even in the boys' room. You know, and because, well, they're biologically have female genitalia, unless and until they grow up and decide to change that. But the reality is that in this country, in America, one of the basic precepts of law is you don't condemn, you don't find somebody guilty because they might do something in the future. You charge a person with a crime or an infraction or whatever based on what they've done, based on their own behavior, based on misbehavior that they themselves have been responsible for. You don't say, well, you fit into a group that I don't like, so therefore we're going to presume criminal intent on your behalf. Is that the kind of America that we live in? Would we say that, or should we say that, actually, because some people clearly do. Anybody who follows the news these days knows it. But we speak out, for example, against stop and frisk, against racial profiling, against somebody, some cop somewhere, saying, I'm being told to back off my microphone just a little bit.
We've got a slight gremlin in the system. That'll help us, I think.
Okay. Well, I am just backed it off a little bit. Okay. So anyway, so we don't say with stop and frisk, nobody is coming out there, even the people who are in support of it. Nobody is coming out there and saying, well, you know, it's a good idea to racially profile. Except, of course, for Mike Bloomberg, but he's an idiot, so. But nobody is saying it's a good idea to racially profile. For cops to be able to go out on the street and say, you're black, you're Hispanic, so therefore you are more likely than not to be a criminal threat. Okay, we just heard a story. There was just a story in the news about a kid who went to Barney's, who was very fashion conscious, bought a $300-something belt at Barney's because he'd seen one of his hip-hop idols wearing one or something along those lines. Well, apparently Barney's, they called the cops. Even though this guy was perfectly legitimate, he bought it with his own money, the money was legitimate, everything was legitimate. But because he was young and black, he was harassed, he was arrested, and the presumption was, oh, well, you're a young black kid, how could you have this kind of money to go buy something like this? It was totally and completely racial profiling. That stuff still goes on in this country right now, today. Right now. Okay? So, you have that. And then you're going to turn around and you're going to say, well, it's okay to make it. And let's be honest, New York State is doing this right now because they don't have transgender protections. So clearly somebody up there in Albany thinks there's some credence to this bigoted nonsense. And of course, there's a governor there who, like most Democratic governors, has no spine whatsoever. So, of course, Captain Caveman, Captain Pago Cuomo, isn't doing anything because, you know, it doesn't mean any money in his pocket. So why should he bother, right? You know, it's like I was saying to Melanie earlier. These people say, well, you know, what are we going to go for? Should we go for workplace protection for transgender people? Well, why should we care? Those people are, you know, those people are poor. They don't represent any value to the New York Democratic Party. They don't represent any large number of donations. So why should we give a shit? Why should the governor bother to say anything? You know, they got their payoff from the Human Rights Campaign and the Empire State Pride Agenda and all those big gay organizations, Freedom to Marry and all those guys. They shoveled their big donation dollars into New York. Oh, they got what they wanted and goodbye, they're off to the next marriage battle, and we're left twisting in the wind again, because that's the way it goes. But that's the thing, okay? We'll decry saying, you can't racially profile, it's wrong to profile based on race. But, oh, it's perfectly okay to profile based on gender identity, right? It's not okay to profile based on sexual orientation in New York. At least in theory, anyway. But it's perfectly okay to arrest somebody just for being trans. And, oh, yeah, by the way, if you're trans and you get busted with condoms, if you're a straight person, they say, oh, you're practicing safe sex. If you're a trans woman and you have condoms, they say, oh, you must be a prostitute. We're arresting you. Yeah. That's New York for you. And that's, by the way, in New York City, where there's supposedly a law that prevents them from doing that. You know, I mean, we've heard that one before. This is the same city, of course, where it still has some of the most draconian birth certificate regulations in the country, even worse than states that are run by Republicans, and has thus far refused to change them. You know, but the hypocrisy is so extreme here. They're saying, well, racial profiling is wrong. But, you know, if you want to accuse someone of prostitution just because they happen to be a trans woman and they're carrying protection. Oh, sure. Absolutely. Perfectly legal. Not a problem. I mean, if that's not hypocrisy, I don't know what it is. So anytime that somebody like Andrew Cuomo tries to tell you that New York is progressive, do us all a favor, laugh in his face, because he deserves it. Because he's a liar and a fool. And you know what? I'll tell you something else. He's trying to cast himself as a progressive. This guy is never going to make it. This guy will never be president because he's a fake. And fake progressives do not become president. Okay? At least Barack Obama never really cast himself as a progressive. He's been a centrist pretty much from day one. Tried to cast himself as a leader of the left, certainly. But as a progressive, he's not really a progressive. He's a shipminder. He's making sure we don't crash into the shore. He's not actually making any headway. Because if he really wanted to make headway, if he really wanted to make progress on civil rights, he'd take the same track on that he campaigned on with the country as a whole. I mean, does anybody remember jobs, jobs, jobs? Does anybody remember that? Jobs, jobs, jobs? Well, what about our jobs, jobs, jobs? But see, nobody can be bothered with that because, you know, I mean, you don't need to bother trusting me on this. Simply go back, go to YouTube, put in Democratic National Campaign Convention 2012. Go through the speeches. President Obama, President Clinton, all these famous Democrats. Count how many times you see the word marriage or two people who love each other or some reference to marriage is in those speeches. Then go back to those same speeches and note how many times you hear the word jobs or ENDA or Employment Non-Discrimination Act. And you know what you'll find? I'll tell you what you'll find because I've done this. You'll find exactly one example of workplace rights being mentioned at the DNCC. One. By John Perez, Speaker of the Assembly of California. He is the only one. He is the only one. Not President Obama, not President Clinton, none of these guys. They were all marriage, 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 marriage. Nobody gave a shit about our jobs. And then here they come, right after the election, coming back. Give us more money. So now, are you getting these Organizing for America has finally discovered ENDA as an issue? I mean, what utter bullshit. I want to read this. I got this email from Organizing for America just today. I want to find it. I tagged it because I wanted to read it. When I read this, it was such bullshit. I wanted to read it on the show tonight. So, yeah, let me see. Do I have enough time? Yeah. Okay. Actually, I should have gone to a break about 5 minutes ago, but that's okay. okay. Now, here it is. It's Organizing for Action, OFA. And I'm going to read this. It's the title of the subject line is Call Senator Menendez, that's my New Jersey senator, senior senator, to say keep up the good work on ENDA. So I see that title, I'm like, what good work on ENDA? What has he done? What has any of them done? And then here's the body of the email. Rebecca, think about this. There is no federal law that consistently protects LGBT individuals from employment discrimination in 29 states. There is no state-specific law either. And in 33 states, there are no protections for gender identity. Oh, what do you know? They actually remembered us. It's 2013. OFA supporters are organizing to change that. The Employment Non-Discrimination Act, or ENDA, would make sure that no one can be legally discriminated against in the workplace just because of who you are or who you love. And it's up for a vote in the full Senate for the first time in 17 years. Really? Gee. You have information that rest of us don't, because all we've heard from Harry Reid is excuse after excuse after excuse after delay after delay after excuse after delay after excuse after delay. So, hey, you know, Organizing for Action, if you guys have information that we don't have, why don't you come out and be honest about it instead of these cryptic bullshit sentences? He says, this is an issue so many of us are passionate about, and it's our chance to make some real progress. Really? So where were you last year and the year before that? I mean, you guys didn't pop out of non-existence. You've been around a while. Where the fuck were you then? Where were you when we needed you? Where were you when we needed you in 2009? I mean, well, I don't know if OFA was actually around in that time, but of course, the guy who created OFA, President Obama, certainly was. He was nowhere to be found on our issues. I'm continuing. OFA supporters across the country are taking action this week to voice our support for ENDA. Will you join by calling Senator Menendez to say thanks for co-sponsoring ENDA today? No, I will not. Because he hasn't done a goddamn thing to help promote it. Just like his boss, Harry Reid. Just like his boss, Barack Obama. I don't call senators up to say thank you for doing nothing. He did nothing. That's not worth thanking someone over. Not sure what to say? Oh, I would know exactly what to say. But not to Senator Menendez. And then they finish off with this. Here's a great fact about why ENDA is so important. In 29 states, there are no state laws protecting gay Americans from being fired because of their sexual orientation. More than 77% of Americans support legislation like this. According to a recent poll, 43% of LGBT employees said they have experienced workplace discrimination. This is about standing up for what's right. Yeah, like transgender inclusion. In your sentences, at least, if nothing else. And you know, it makes you wonder when you see something like this. This is the kind of, and so this came to us from Devin Driscoll of Organizing for Action. And then they wonder why we don't trust these people. I mean, this is bullshit. Call Senator Menendez to say thanks for doing nothing? Why? Why should I? Why should I call a senator and say thank you for hiding under a rock? Bullshit. Is this really, I mean, has the bar sunk this low that we're supposed to be thanking these people simply for being signed on to the bill? No advocacy required? No actual leadership required? You think that's worthy of a thank you? Well, then you know what, Organizing for Action? You're certainly not getting any donations from me, because you guys and this community are on completely different planets. I'm sorry, but this is bullshit. And what's more, you guys know it's bullshit. You do. You know it's bullshit. Okay? You know, we know as well as you guys know that what this really is, oh shit, we can't raise money on marriage anymore. So let's see, maybe we can get some people to chip in on ENDA. Even though we can't do a fucking thing. Even though... even though we have no plans. We have no plans. We have no plans to, you know, how they're going to do it. Even though Harry Reid is still unwilling to commit to a vote, even though we've been being fucked over by the United States Senate for 17 years. 17 years? This is what you want us to say thank you for? Are you shitting me? I mean, really, how stupid do you people think I am? How stupid do you think that LGBT Americans are? We pay attention. You can't bullshit us and then turn around and expect us to just keep giving you money. I mean, I don't know. How's that, Mr. Mike? Are we still now? I just turned it down a little bit more.
Yeah, for some reason, our Skype has been a little distorted this week. I'm sorry about that, folks. Sometimes the levels creep up and we end up with a little surprise here on the air. But I think we're doing better now, Becky.
Okay. Well, I just wanted to make sure because, you know, I don't want to
It's one of those things where if it's distorted, it's harder to listen to than we'd like, and that's not a good thing. So we like to make it very easy on the ear.
Yes, so I hope we're sounding better now. Yes. I just backed out. Oh, good. Okay, so I mean, I'm sorry, but you know, when Organizing for Action contacts me and tells me to thank my senator for doing nothing, for just signing his name onto a bill that's been around for 17 years, making no effort to see it come into to get a vote, making no effort to see this actually become law, making no effort when he was actually in the United States Senate when it came up in 2009 and did nothing. This is what you want me to thank my senator for? Are you fucking kidding me? I'm sorry. This is bullshit. And you know what? This guy, Devin Driscoll, I don't know whether he's an aide for John Carson, but, I mean, do these people actually do anything except ask for money? I mean, really, what have they accomplished? What do they do except for, like, beg for money from Democrats, you know, from people who are on Barack Obama's old campaign list? I mean, is there anything that they actually do? Is there anything of value that these people accomplish other than just beg for money? Oh, here's another issue you should donate for money, even though we don't do a goddamn thing about it. I mean, and if this is what you do, Organizing for Action, begging for money, and having the intent to do nothing to deserve that money, simply just collecting so that then you can distribute to Democratic members of Congress to help them get reelected. If that's really what you do, then why don't you be honest about it? And why don't you take the time to understand the issues that you're trying to promote? Because I can tell you from this is bullshit. Whoever wrote this nonsense, it's not credible. Don't come to me and ask me to thank politicians who do nothing. Staying silent is not something you thank political leaders for. We hire them to lead. If you don't lead, there's nothing to thank you for. Running scared is not something you get thanked for. Okay? Anybody can be a co-sponsor. That's not hard. It's doing something about it. that's hard. I'm still waiting for Bob Menendez to do something. I mean, really. I mean, he sure inserts himself into the mix whenever there's something going on about immigration. I have yet to hear him say word one about ENDA. So don't promote this guy to me as some great hero when he hasn't done a goddamn thing to help me and mine. And if you people over at Organizing for Action understood the realities of our lives instead of we're just a shop that figure out different ways to separate voters from their money, if you guys were a real activist organization instead of just a political fundraising prop for Barack Obama and the Democratic Party, if you were real activists, you would know that. You would understand that this sending us this kind of mealy-mouthed nonsense and trying to get us to give you money based on the Employment Non-Discrimination Act for a Congress and a bunch of political leaders in Washington who haven't done jack shit to help us, you would have some kind of a clue as to how that might be received. Don't you think? But you're not. You're a money collection place. You are a fundraising organization. You are not activists. You are as every bit as astroturf as those idiotic Tea Party outfits, okay? You're not there to be activists. You're not there to insert a political agenda. You're there to collect money for Democrats. And you know what? No sale. Sorry. My money, what little there is of it, will be going in my pocket to fund my life. Because I'm going to apply it, my money, to what helps me. You want some of that money? Well, just tell me how you're going to help me. Tell me how donating to the Democratic Party is going to make my life better. That of my fellow trans people. I mean, when I came out in 1997, there was no federal law protecting me from discrimination. Here we are, it's 2013, and there's still no federal law protecting me from discrimination. I mean, why would I give money to any organization that accomplishes nothing to help me in 17 years? You know where I would donate my money? I would donate my money to replacing some of these senators who haven't done jack shit in 17 years on ENDA. That's what I think. That's where I think the money should go. I think we should start booting some of these cowards out of the Democratic caucus and start replacing them with real progressives. You know what? The Tea Party has the right idea. Wrong ideology, but right idea. It's time to start lopping heads. If you're not going to fight for me, then goddamn it, I'm going to find somebody who will. And before you start begging me to call and thank Senator Menendez for doing nothing, for sitting there with his head under his desk hiding, you better think twice. All right, it is time for our final break. We have got, what have we got? I know Mr. Mike told me and I promptly forgot. What did I forget? Oh, it's The Courage from Venus to Mars and All the Pretty Horses. And we got a long break. It'll be about 6 minutes. And we will catch you then.
Standing on the sidewalk in the doorway, what's the future? What's the next day? Take the sadness, take discouragement.
Four. we're talking about some real sick stuff here. Man on man, hairy baby, BDSM, bottoms acting like tops, tops acting like bottoms. It's just the whole world gone topsy-turvy.
You won.
It's the Rebecca Juro Show, and thanks for sticking around, as always. Oh, I love that. That was Weird Al Yankovic. Oh, I thought that was Devo for a minute there, but now it's Mr. Mike reminds me is actually the Al Yankovic. What is it? Weird Al Yankovic parody of Devo, actually.
Oh, it's so choice. I'm sending that out to my congressman, Representative Paul Gosar, who voted to keep the government closed. Fantastic.
Oh, what a hero. Guy. See, it's not just Democrats. oh, my goodness. All right, so there was a couple other things I wanted to talk about tonight. We got a little bit more time. We got another half hour. So one of the things I wanted to talk about, well, this took place in Hollywood, right on the Walk of Fame. You know, now Hollywood Boulevard, everybody thinks, you know, this is a rather liberal place, Los Angeles, right? Hollywood. Police on Wednesday arrested a second person in connection with a beating of a trans woman on Hollywood Boulevard, according to the Los Angeles cops. May 31st, the attack took place. It was captured on a surveillance camera pointed towards the Walk of Fame and showed the victim, known as Vivian, being kicked on the ground by four males. The arrest on Wednesday was of a man police had been keeping an eye on throughout the investigation, LAPD officer Madison said. After watching the man for a couple of months, police found enough evidence to arrest him. The man's name was not immediately released. Police first arrested 21-year-old Nicole, I have to try and pronounce this, Shaknazarian, I hope that's how it's pronounced, in June, just days after announcing a $25,000 reward for information on the attack. Shaknazarian was one of the four people sought by police. The security camera footage released by the LAPD showed multiple males chasing a woman in a red dress down a dark Hollywood Boulevard. The group is seen kicking the victim on the ground before running away on the Walk of Fame. The victim was hospitalized for a week with severe injuries, including two black eyes and cuts on the face. Lovely. Hollywood. Fucking Hollywood this took place in. But, you know, it's trans people who make other people feel uncomfortable, right? It's trans people who are the threats that we shouldn't be allowed into bathrooms, right? Yeah, because, you know, it's all, you know, after all, you just ask a conservative. It's all her fault that she had the crap kicked out of her by four bigoted men who beat her bloody for the crime of walking down the street. You know, I mean, after all, you know, what's she doing out there in public being trans? She must have deserved it, right? Right? You know. I mean, seriously, this is the logic. This is conservative logic on this stuff. Well, you know, you're out there walking in a dress. What do you expect? What, you expect to be, like, treated like other people? You know, like people like, you know, like them? You know, I mean, really, and it just goes to show you that discrimination, bigotry is everywhere. I don't care how liberal your state is. I don't care how liberal your governor is or your state legislature or how many laws you have on the books. It's still out there, and it's still out there in your face, and it could still happen to you anywhere. Ladies, trans ladies, go to your local gun store or army supply place or whatever you have in your area. buy yourself a can of pepper spray. And don't be afraid to use it. Girls, I know. I know. I used to wear the leather jackets and the ripped jeans. I thought I could go anywhere, never have a problem. And then I came out and I learned, no, 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 you're a lady now. You have to start acting like one. Because you're not just a lady, you're a lady who's a target. Girls, go get yourself some pepper spray. And just to illustrate, to underscore, Mr. Mike has reminded me, we have a lovely clip. Just to underscore the bigotry, not even just the bigotry, but utter stupidity of some of these people in the right wing. There's this guy. Let me see. I have the article here somewhere. Wait a minute. I have to find it. Where is it? Well, it seems I've lost the article, but okay. There is this guy. He was, I should say, the Republican state organization leader, chair, I guess. You know, the Rance Priebus of South Carolina, if you will. Okay. And he lost his job after he appeared on Jon Stewart. And, you know, you wonder if he was fired for being a racist jerk or if he was fired for being stupid. Seriously, check this out.
Right. Matter of fact, one of my best friends is black.
So one of your best friends?
One of my best friends.
Is black?
Yes.
And there's more.
When I was a young man, you didn't call a black, you called him a Negro. I had a picture one time of Obama sitting on a stump as a witch doctor, and I posted that on Facebook. I was making fun of my white half of Obama, not the black half. And now you have a black person using the term nigger this, nigger that, and it's okay for them to do it.
You know that we can hear you, right?
Yeah.
Okay, you know that. You know that we can hear you.
Yeah.
Okay, all right. Then I found out the real reason for the law.
The law is going to kick the Democrats in the butt.
Wow! An executive GOP committee member just admitted that this law isn't designed to hurt black people. It's designed to hurt Democrats.
If it hurts a bunch of college kids that's too lazy to get up off their bow hunkers and go get a photo ID, so be it.
Right, right.
If it hurts the whites, so be it. If it hurts a bunch of lazy blacks that wants the government to give them everything, so be it.
And it just so happens that a lot of those people vote Democrat.
Gee.
Oh, my goodness. I mean, you know, like I said, I'm not sure whether this guy was fired for being a racist bigot.
Or just an idiot.
Because I don't think that that's a disadvantage in the Republican Party, certainly not in South Carolina.
No.
But I do wonder if they fired him for stupidity. That was, by the way, South Carolina Buncombe, I assume I'm pronouncing this correctly, Buncombe County Republican Precinct Chairman Henry Mitchell. On Jon Stewart being interviewed by one of his reporter guys. You know, I mean,
it's the Confederacy all over again. It really is, Mickey.
Because
he's scaring me.
I mean, he's so obviously and casually racist. And then, you know, I mean, granted, that had nothing to do with LGBT. But if you can be that casual about racism, imagine how he would be when discussing our issues. Now, let's be honest. We're talking about South Carolina here. Is it not exactly a bastion of liberalism? I mean, really. But, I mean, come on. At the very least, you don't go on national television and start spilling out the N-word.
Yeah.
I mean, like I said, I don't think he was necessarily fired for racism. I think he was fired for stupidity. Because no matter what you believe, you don't go on national television on one of the most popular shows in the country and spew this nonsense. Okay? I mean, they fired him the day after, and I think it's obvious as to why. You know?
Thank goodness.
But the thing that makes me crazy about this, Mike, you know, and you live in an area where you see this all the time.
Oh, yes.
I mean...
I got stories. That
somebody like that, a political person, regardless of where their political intent is, regardless of where their ideology is, that a politically astute person feels comfortable saying stuff like this on national television. That's why I believe, as long as the Republican Party still has people like that running the show, they are doomed. They are going to become...
You know, it's
going to
get worse. For 2014, yeah. The Tea Party's making this big power move. It's going to happen, and you're going to be seeing more guys like that, and they don't care what we think. They really don't care. They're talking to their base.
Exactly. But I think the problem is what you're going to see is over time, and I think we're already seeing this. I mean, I think we're seeing this as a result of the shutdown. As the oldest and most conservative die off or are whittled down by reality and start to change their views on things like, for example, gay marriage and workplace rights and other things that just, you know, maybe they know somebody who's gay or trans, maybe they attended a wedding, maybe they, you know, helped or were with somebody through their transition. I mean, any one of a dozen or more different, for whatever reason, the country is evolving. Of that, there is no doubt. Just look at the polls. I mean, you know, 4 or 5 years ago, you would never, ever be able to find a majority of any state, I don't think, in favor of same-sex marriage. Now, look at how many states have adopted it. Look at how many more states now have ENDA-like laws, workplace protections, for all of us. I mean, you know, look at how much progress that we've made. But again, I think as time goes on, you know, as we see these things in our lives, people are coming out. They're not afraid. People are coming out at you know, 5, 6, 7 years old as teenagers, you know, in terms of being trans, as early as 3, 4, 5 years old. I think as that continues and as we get more and more along the, you know, as progress continues, what's going to happen is these people are going to find themselves more and more marginalized. I mean the left, I mean progressives, I mean LGBT, I mean people who think that civil rights are for everybody, not the politically convenient. We are evolving, and we are becoming more liberal and more left, and these people are becoming more and more marginalized. And I think I believe personally that we've already reached a point where the Republican Party, as it is consistent right now today, is incapable of winning a federal election. I believe at this point, if we held the next presidential election today, whoever was the Democratic Party nominee would be our next president. I believe that. The only place that the Republicans are going to have a stronghold anytime soon, ongoing, is in the South. And even that is fading in some areas. Granted, there's still a lot more progress that needs to be made in those areas. But I think that's what you're going to see. I think you're going to see that more and more people are going to say, you know what? We don't want to be the intolerant party. We don't want to be the racist party. We don't want to be the bigot party. We don't want to be the Christian fundamentalist party. We want to be the Republican party. We want to be conservatives. We want to give an alternate vision in economics and taxes. But we don't need to focus on, we're not a church. We're a political party. And I think once they're able to do that, once they're able to separate and say, this is what we believe as Christians or as religious people, and this is what we focus on as political people, and we'll let the church take care of the church stuff, and we'll let the politicians take care of the political stuff. And one does not have to be another. One does not have to be interchangeable. Being a Christian does not mean that you have to be anti-gay or anti-trans. It just means that you believe what you believe. You go to the church that you want to go to, and you don't prevent anyone else from doing exactly the same thing. Seriously. Because when you get right down to it, that's what freedom is really all about. Seriously. That's what freedom is about. It's not just your freedom, but mine too. My freedom to live my life the way I choose, just as it's your freedom to live your life the way you choose. I mean, you know who said it best? And I always laugh at myself every time I quote this, but it's the truth. Dick Cheney. Dick Cheney had the best quote. I think freedom means freedom for everyone. That's about as simple as it gets. And that's exactly right. I don't have to agree with Dick Cheney on his opinion of foreign policy. I don't have to agree with George Bush. I don't have to agree with Jeb. I don't have to agree with any Republican. And they don't have to agree with me. But I don't have the right to silence them, to go out of my way to make their lives harder, just because I disagree with them politically. I can disagree without saying, not only do I disagree with you, but I have to punish you for disagreeing with me. And that's what Republicans do. I don't like you, so therefore I am going to go out of my way to make your life harder. I want to punish you for being different from me. Every time you get a law that does something like what Tennessee did, where they roll back all the civil rights laws that aren't approved by the state, that's what they're doing. They're punishing you for being different. When New York City refuses to update their own regulations of their own health department to comply with their own law to make it easy for trans people to have our birth certificates reflect our chosen gender, that's what they're doing. They're saying, we're okay with this discrimination. Because if they weren't, I mean, you know, this is a law that's been on the books for 11 years. So if they really believed in that anti-trans discrimination is wrong, well, they've had 11 years to bring their own regulations into compliance with city law. And they haven't done it. So what does that tell you? It tells you they're not serious. It tells you they don't care. It tells you that the law that they passed isn't worth the paper it's printed on, because no one is going to bother to, actually enforce it, to make it worthwhile, to make that law have teeth and to actually accomplish what it was intended to accomplish. So then what is that law worth anyway? You know, it's incredibly frustrating. All right, let's see. We got a few more minutes left. Let's see. And what else do we got here? Let's see if we got time for one more. I'll do this. This is a short one. this is from LGBTQ Nation. In Russia, Dasha Stern, who's a trans woman, she was reported to have committed suicide on October 16th. After her employer, and listen to this, after her employer allegedly fired her based on the fear that by employing her, the firm would be in violation of the national ban on the promotion of non-traditional sexual relationships. The Association of Russian Lawyers for Human Rights reported that Stern had recently been disowned by her parents and kicked out of her home, presumably for being transgender. Stern had also been recently approved for a mortgage and auto loan, but was unable to make those payments after she lost her job. Prominent Russian human rights attorney Masha Bast, along with other Russian LGBT activists, held a vigil and rally next near the Kremlin in Moscow's Red Square on Saturday in honor of Stern. Bast, an openly bisexual trans woman, told Rus Advocate, the official blog for the Russian Lawyers for Human Rights, Vladimir Putin has created the system where there is no place for transgender, there is no place for dissenters. Dasha Stern is the victim of the indifference of Russian society. Yeah. Let's see if Chris Hayes covers this one. Because, you know, I mean, he certainly has no problem putting video of a Russian high school girl having her head kicked in by violent Russian thug males. Certainly has no problem putting that up right before he goes and talks to another Russian activist all about marriage, 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 marriage. Let's see if he covers this one. I'll tell you, I actually sent this to him on Twitter and to his show. Needless to say, it hasn't come up. Gee, I'm shocked, aren't you? Yeah, because, you know, I mean, after all, you know, civil rights in this country, if you watch MSNBC, it's all about gay people getting married, right? Well, after all, why shouldn't it be? Gay people can afford those Jaguars and sandals vacations and financial services products and all that, you know, upper middle class, you know, glitter crap that they sell on MSNBC. You know, that's obviously the audience they're going for. And it is quite clear that Chris Hayes is a loyal company man who goes after the wealthiest demographics, clearly. You know, it's disappointing, you know, because you figure a guy who wrote for The Nation, a guy who wrote a book basically about inequality in America, which I might add is quite good, I've read it, you would think that a guy like that would be more tuned in. You know what I'm saying? That he wouldn't abuse a video of a hate crime to make a sensationalistic lead-in on his show like he did. This was several weeks ago, actually. I wrote about this. I had the article published, Balerico in the Huffington Post, as most of my work does. And speaking of which, my work may very well turn up in a place it's never been before that I am very excited about. I did make a comment on Facebook earlier. I'm not prepared to give you the whole story just yet. You'll have to wait until next week's show for that, hopefully, because by then you'll know where it turned up. But I believe it is going to appear next week in something that can credibly be called major media or mainstream media, if you wish. I don't want to give you all the details, but let's just say when this appears, there's something I get to check off my bucket list. That's all I'm going to say for now. I don't want to jinx it. I'm afraid that if I get more specific, I'll jinx it, and I don't want to risk that. So, but suffice it to say, by next week, I'll have something new to check off my bucket list. But, yeah, we're just about, we're almost out of time. And I'm not going to want any more stories, but, you know, I really do believe that when we band together, like we did in 2007, when all these organizations got together and they said, you know what, Human Rights Campaign, you're on your own, because when you start saying that you support a non-inclusive version of ENDA, even when you're saying, well, we're also okay with the inclusive version, that's not okay with us. And we are going to put you on the outside because you are not where the rest of the community is. Well, you know what? HRC, it took them a while, but they're getting the message and they're doing something about it. And they get credit from me for doing that. So I say, we've got to extend this. It's not just about HRC. We got to get these leaders. We got to get Harry Reid. You said you're going to bring up ENDA for a vote this fall? Well, it's fall, and we're going to hold you to it. And I think we all need to do that. All right. That is about it for us. I want to say thank you, as always, to the amazing Mr. Mike, who gets us on the air and works his audio magic so that I don't sound like an idiot every time I turn on this microphone. And of course, thank you to you for supporting this media, for tuning in. And I want to remind everybody, of course, if you missed anything, just a few minutes from now, after a lovely musical interlude from Mr. Mike, you'll hear the whole show all over again. You can listen to me with me as we go and listen back to the show. And we will catch you next week. I'm not sure what's going on, but I don't know. I'll post about it. Have a good night, everybody. Good night.